Hey everyone, welcome back to my First Time Stories podcast. I'm Janet Mbogwa. Can you believe it's been 10 years since the first Menstrual Hygiene Day was marked back in 2014, May 28th? 10 years later, have we made progress? Is there more pushback? Because sometimes it feels like the more things change, the more they stay the same. What I can say is there has been significant progress in the conversation, in the policies, not so much in the implementation and the access to products. So where are the gaps? What's going wrong? What more do we need to see? What more do we need to do? I sat down with somebody who has been on top of this conversation from as far back as 2006. And I was also joined by a young man who is coaching and mentoring other youth advocates, and a young woman who still feels that period shame is one of the biggest things that needs to be addressed. Here is that conversation on periods through 10 years of Menstrual Hygiene Day.
I'm Megan Makuria. I'm the founder and CEO of Zana Africa.
I'm Innocent Indeje, Youth Coordinator at Productive Health Network Kenya.
I'm Lucy Wamboi. I'm SRHR Advocate.
Awesome. We're talking about 10 years of Menstrual Hygiene Day. I don't know how we got here. And I often say, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. So I want to get some quick reflections, and we'll start with you, Megan. When you think, yes, it's 10 years of MH Day as the day, but it's many years of menstrual sort of like conversation, activism, access. What's your just off the bat initial reaction to where we are now vis-a-vis where we've come from?
It seems like sometimes the farther you go, the farther you have to go. You know, it's been amazing since launching the National Sanitary Towels campaign in 2006, Valentine's Day, when that was kind of like a lone cry in the world. But building on the Kenyan female MPs who waived value-added tax in 2004, it's exciting to see that there's a global conversation, right? The terms menstrual equity exists. The terms period poverty and ending period shame are things. You know, Kenya's won awards for helping to end period shame and creating campaigns around that. There's now legislation from Kenya to the US and others around helping people be able to manage their periods with dignity, right? So there's so much to be done. Like, we as Zana don't lead with menstruation and periods anymore, even. We lead with gender equality because we don't have to convince people anymore that pads are a problem. And I think that that's probably something that we who are in the field and doing this all the time can kind of forget, because there's so much that we're trying to still do. But I think that that's really significant and needs to be kind of celebrated, and we need to pause and recognize that around, especially Kenya, but the world really is starting to recognize this as an issue and addressing it. Mm-hmm. We still have a long way to go, though.
Yeah, I'll come back to you. I really like how you talked about leading with gender equality. So I'll get your thoughts on that. In a sense, you talk about being a youth coordinator with RHNK. Again, reflecting on this milestone, now that, you know, there's a lot more conversation on menstrual health, etc. But kind of what unique perspective does RHNK use or do to talk about menstrual health and rights? Because you're such a broad umbrella organization, right? How are you also, as a youth coordinator, actually, how are you working with young people to understand the legacy of Menstrual Hygiene Day and to inculcate in them a passion for menstrual health?
So basically what we are doing as an organization, and let's say, and just focusing on the young people themselves, it's one, just picking from what Megan has talked about when you look at the aspect of gender equality, it's working with the government, working with the communities, just to ensure that the policies that are available, the legal framework that are available, are well implemented. But although it's not quite working well, for example, looking at the policy, the MHM policy that was launched in 2020, the 2019-2030 policy. So we've had the back and forth, but just working with the communities in a way that the communities want us to work with. Let's talk about things like developing and sharing stories about what's happening. As an organization, we've been on the forefront of doing that, just to ensure that we are building and sharing community customized, contextualized stories. And this way we are able to do away with things like myth, and taboos, and the stigma that comes along with it. And, you know, you just talked about 10 years down the line. I was like, so if 10 years down the line, somebody was in grade 6, this person had started menstruating, and we understand that the girl misses about 4 days of education when she's there menstruating in a month.
if they don't have access.
Especially with women and girls within the most remote areas, where even just showing the girl a pad is something they'll say, what's this? I remember there was a video last when our kid was saying, girls are being given bread every time, but for us boys are not given those breads. You know, this is very disappointing. Well, indeed that boy didn't understand that the girl was being given a pad, and so it wasn't a bread. So this it's been recorded that a girl generally might miss, if they don't access the pads, about 4 days in a month. That generates to about 6 weeks in a year. So looking at 10 years down the line, I'm looking at like 60.
Okay, we'll come back and have a deeper conversation about that. But so you're saying, I think from what I've, especially from your initial point, a lot of what you do is, it's almost like community co-created
again,
solutions.
Yes. So and then just more of the creation of awareness, just to ensure that we are doing away with the stigma and bringing the boy child into the picture, just to ensure that when they see the girls having these issues, they understand and they help to.
They have empathy and
exactly,
extend that to them.
Yeah.
Okay. Lucy, again, when we're talking about, first of all, 10 years ago, is this a conversation that you were either passionate about, aware of? 10 years ago was 2014.
2014, I think that's when I was doing my KCPE. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, I had my first period when I was sitting for my KCPE. So coming from that point, I think it's very important for us to incorporate menstrual education with the co-curricula, like the current co-curricula, because if you are taught about periods, then it won't be such a shock to you when you first start menstruating. But if you've never heard about it, then that's something else.
Was it a shock for you?
It was not a shock for me because, first of all, I heard about it when I was in class 6 in school, literally, because during that time when I was a teenager, I didn't have like any female figure around me. So yeah, I first heard about it when I was in school, and then good luck, they used to provide sanitary towels in our school. So I knew how to go about it, but then it was very uncomfortable because there was a lot of period shaming then, especially because when you used to go when they called us to give us sanitary towels, the boys used to be like, go get pampered so that you don't pee on yourself. As in, there was a lot of stigma compared to it. If you want to go to the toilet and change your pad, you cannot carry it like that. You cannot put it in your pocket. You have to be like, you have to hide it. There was a lot of period shaming during that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
10 years on, did you carry part of the shame as well? Was it something that you sometimes felt, or did you feel like, I have enough awareness to be able to navigate this journey? Where were you in that perspective?
No, I don't think, even right now, there's still Some small period shaming, even at my big age. There was a lot of period shaming then, like you don't want anyone to know that you're menstruating or anything. Even in high school, you also used to experience a lot of period shaming. Mm-hmm. It was a girl's school, but any time you would mess on your dress, everyone used to be like, oh, she has porridge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Period shaming. So 10 years on, it's still there.
Yeah, it's still there. But I also think rather than period shaming, there are so many things that affect period because, like he mentioned about the policies, the MHM policy, the 2019-2030 policy, we have good policies in the country, but now the problem comes in when it comes to implementing these policies. Yeah, exactly. Because you find that there are other things that affect, you know, menstruation. We have natural calamities, like we are coming from drought, now we have floods, we had COVID-19, and these things lead to even worse things like, you know, gender-based violence and teen pregnancies.
Yeah, thanks for that. Megan, your reactions. And I can imagine, though, for you, because it's such a journey, having experienced and absorbed all the information and the policy conversations, etc. Maybe off the bat, before you come in to talk about what I think you've talked about sometimes, saying there's a false notion around some statistics, when you think through the scope of experience you've had, are you more triggered the more you go along, or how do you react to it?
So,
safe space.
I mean, menstruation is a very real issue, and girls put themselves in extreme harm's way in order to manage their menstruation, right? They are 10% of transactional sex is for pads. These are from research studies, not just like made up in my head, right? For women, 65% of transactional sex is for commodities that include pads, right? But for girls specifically, much less, the 20% of all sexual violence in the country is done by BOTA drivers, usually against girls. And that's often because they're giving girls quote unquote free things, but they're not free. And the girls don't understand that transaction that they're getting into, right? So the problem is it's easy, and that was the narrative that we used, you know, almost 20 years ago when we were starting this out, like girls miss school. Mm-hmm. And it was Mercy Musomi and what's the other guy's name? He was the first gender officer, Jeffrey Wongo, something like that, at the Ministry of Education. We literally, like, were sitting at a desk and, like, on the napkin, like, kind of sussed out, okay, if a girl has her period for an average of this many days and she's missing school, blah, 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 blah. That has now become what everybody says. And the reality is that the studies that Emily Oster has done, the studies that Linda Scott has done, the studies that we did, girls aren't missing school because of periods. They're only missing school like 3% because of menstruation. But what they're doing in order to make themselves stay in school is what we need to be talking about, right? And so I feel like the story misses the nuance and the statistics for people who know. Like in policy, if you know that actually it's only 3%, but you don't know this background of what girls are doing instead, it's tricky because you could easily say, okay, well, girls don't miss school, therefore don't bother giving girls pads, it's not really an issue, which is not the...
So you're saying it's what they're doing in order to not miss school,
yeah,
that should be the conversation.
Yes.
Unpack that a little bit, then we can go back to, then those who are missing, why are they missing?
So the majority of girls are missing school because of droughts, because of floods, because of caregiving. Like the
caregiving
calamities and the caregiving are the biggest reasons that kids, that girls especially miss school. So those need to also be addressed, right? Like if the, and it's hard to do that. Like if the road is out, you can't.
Yeah, you can't reach school, yeah.
If there's a giant river between you and your school, you can't go, right? But the caregiving, the more we can have gender equality, the less an awareness, the less girls will be disproportionately affected by taking care of a sick grandmother or younger child or mom or dad.
But
or whatever.
Some of it's still because they don't have pads.
Yeah, so 3% when we did, the largest study on attendance in Africa over 2 years in Khalifi. So we did a randomized control trial, and just very briefly, there were interventions with pads, without pads, but just health education, and then both and whatever the control was, right? What the government's supposed to be doing. We went randomly for different months and recorded attendance for the entire month for all the kids, right? So you would think that if that whole month is captured, and those are three random months, I think per year, I think it was 6 months total, you would see if girls are missing consecutively for certain days, that would come out, right? But it didn't, only 3%. And this is in rural Khalifi, right? Mm. Only 3% was due to menstruation, right? So even though they didn't have pads, so they're putting homemade solutions, they're figuring it out because they know that education is the key to unlocking their own future, right? But they're getting bacterial vaginosis, they're getting yeast infections, they don't know what those are, they're not having good hygiene, all these other things. And they're being preyed upon sexually. Mm-hmm. You know, we even had girls who were solicited for the porn industry and wanted to do that because they had sick family members that needed medical bills, right? So they're incredibly vulnerable, but they're figuring out how to get into school. Mm-hmm. And so what we need to do is take away the risk. Because it's a human, to me, I think that the framing that we've adopted is girls do miss school because of pads, but what they're doing is actually harming themselves in order to get those pads.
Like the transactional
sex
as one example.
Exactly. And so what we need to do is give them the human right to manage their menstruation with dignity, which the UN actually did declare it's a human right a couple years ago, right? So to give them that human right to manage their period with dignity so that we don't have to have those types of conversations and they don't have to make those trade-offs of a lose-lose situation.
I wonder why some of these points are not as mainstream, because I think it's harmful to stick to a certain... way of saying things, which I do as well, when it's constantly evolving, there's constantly new research. So I don't know how we can collectively think of ways to just disseminate this information out there.
I mean,
and I'd love you guys to react to what Megan said when she finished.
I think it makes absolute sense because in our FGDs, the way we do our just creating stories and sharing stories, listening to what girls say. So I come from the western part of Kenya, mm. where tradition and us is like, mm, we are twins. So yeah. one of the traditions is when a woman is menstruating, you cannot go to the farm to plug the greens. Mm. You can't do that. When a woman is menstruating, if you pass through a groundnut farm, you won't harvest anything. So you're looking at such things, and there's a day we collected this from a girl, and she was said, we are not able to cook at our home because we cannot go to the farm because our elder sister was supposed to go and get the greens cannot go because of the taboos. So you realize that it's not just education alone, but even the other contributing factors that will lead them to going to extreme ways of even just getting the money the way you've said it. They'll go to do the transactional sex. Yeah.
And so, sometimes even your point about the other ways in which it's used, because sometimes exactly. I think it's not even sometimes, it could be the taboo and the mm-hmm. stigma, mm-hmm. but sometimes it just goes back to the power play. Mm-hmm. Because they hear you on your period, maybe they don't even believe in the stigma, but they know they can use that as a way to take away your power and agency, yeah, mm-hmm. which is also very dangerous when it becomes, they now know, we need to say when they're on their period, they're not allowed to mm-hmm. even contribute to harvesting and farming.
Yeah.
So I think that's another danger in sharing a narrative that is then used to the disadvantage mm-hmm. of women and girls. So that's also something I've picked mm-hmm. from what you've said. I don't have data for it, but I truly think it's one of the ways that you can weaponize agencies.
Exactly,
is just
yeah,
say,
yeah.
actually, no, but you're on your period, right? Okay, cool. So you can't go. Stay back and take care of the kids, and I can go and do whatever, and maybe not giving her a chance to contribute.
Yeah.
Lucy, do you want to
I just wanted to say something. I feel like also when it comes to menstrual health advocacy, we really have to be keen when it comes to generational talks, because for example, if you go back in the days, maybe if a girl could not access menstrual products, the most they could think of is using a t-shirt and whatever. But now with like the growing internet and the girls are very exposed from a very young age. And one thing I've found on the internet is that you may find like really, really good people educating these girls, but also people who are misleading these girls are very many. And these girls, like if I come from a point where I don't have information, then I'll tend to believe who I hear first. Because so if you mislead me, that's what I'm going to follow. So that might also contribute to in sexual intercourse, exchanging sex for
even if I can respond to that. I know that there's data around the rising cases of HIV/AIDS amongst girls aged between 15 and 19
mm-hmm.
being on the rise, teen pregnancy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in as much as to your point, the digital space is hugely resourceful. I'm an advocate for it. But when you're interacting with them, you do realize that their points of information are very mixed.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them will often tell you, and nobody's really talking to us. I mean, they'll pass over our heads. I don't hear it from home. I don't hear it in school. But when my cousin, Chico, tells me, I'm going to believe what Chico says. And even there's times we've had talks with girls talking about just basic menstrual health, how to wear a pad. And then we say, any questions? Okay, right, so how often should I use the P2?
Mm-hmm.
And she's 13.
Yeah, yeah.
And, my friend said I should use it every week.
Mm-hmm.
And so before you see the teachers gagging and gasping and trying to tell us, don't answer. And we were telling them, maybe you won't let us answer. They are already going to find the information.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go deeper and find where they're getting that information from. So when it comes to information dissemination, Megan, just based on even what Innocent and Lucy and I have said, then where is the biggest gap when it comes to the data and wealth of knowledge that is there? There is actually information.
I'd love to hear quickly where you guys think the gap is.
Number one, I think when it comes to parental care, we find a lot of parents are not able to give these kids this information because you find that your parent was born back in the days and all these girls are modern girls. So like having that conversation is kind of very hard because there's the issue of morals. Like parents, there are morals that parents hold that this young generation, no, there's no way. So there's that issue of parenting and there's also the issue of social media because sometimes I look at people who do advocacy, people who are giving like now the right information and you look at the people who are following them and listening to them, they are not as many as a person who just popped on TikTok and now without even doing their own background check, they just come and give information and these kids tend to absorb that information real quick.
Okay, that's one.
Uh-huh. She talked about parents, and I remembered there's a day when I was still around, I think it was in primary, and my mom told about wanted to talk about things around relationships. My dad was seated there. When he heard that, he said, he just walked out. So you see, like, my dad didn't want to have that conversation at all. And my mom would tell me, girls are bad, but I have a sister. And then I was like, mom, but I have a sister. How are girls bad? Anyway, so looking at just the way, I think it's about reliability. And also just the way maybe the information has been shared with us as young kids. There's so much about somebody giving information to threaten you in a threatening way so that you can, like, refrain totally. So I've seen it in schools where when we're doing our sessions in schools, and then a teacher will come and say, if you start using P2, you'll never give birth. So you see, they don't give you the details. They don't tell you if you use it this way, it will harm you.
They use scare tactics.
Yeah, exactly. They use scare tactics. Our parents will do the same. But look at this today's generation. They're calling them, I don't know, the generation, the Gen Zs.
Yeah.
You can't tell the kid something and then she or he says,
yeah,
okay,
they
dad. Yeah, they
which
must
is healthy.
Question.
Yeah.
They must question. But are our parents ready to be questioned? Mm. Are our teachers ready to be questioned? Is the government ready to be questioned? And then when it comes to the government itself, the way we are sharing the information as the government, or maybe as the NGOs. Sometimes we say in the NGO world, we use jargon so much. Mm. We are so official. But look at the way TikTok is moving very well, and the way influencers are affecting people. It's the way they're sharing information in an appealing way.
I know we need to wind up, and there's still a few points. Where do you think the disconnect is between the knowledge that's there, the information that's there, and the knowledge sharing?
Well, I mean, it's the same thing that Lucy said about having good policies but not actually implementing them, right?
Them,
so,
yeah.
Like, we had this 2-year randomized control trial, and basically, in like two sentences, what we found was that when you give sanitary pads and you combine it with the reproductive health education, you actually amplify the depth of gender equality shifting and of knowledge retention, right? Because, for example, a girl is told she's not allowed to play sports when she's on her period, right? Then she goes and plays sports because she learns about her human rights, and she goes and plays sports, and God doesn't smite her, the world doesn't end, and actually maybe her cramps feel better, right? So then they experientially understand social norms and experientially understand human rights and then choose human rights. So they very quickly shift from girls have a right to play sports, to boys and girls are equal in the classroom and should share household chores, to dad shouldn't beat the kids or mom, right, permanently.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of our global, like, gift, right, of, like, we have to pair sanitary pads and reproductive health education together because the same number of girls who don't have access to pads also don't have access to that information, and maybe even more. So we actually now have an MOU for the last 2 years with Kenya Institute of Curriculum Development to take that curriculum that we created, which is all story-based from Kenyans all over the country, and to put it into the CBC curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
But because of a lot of macroeconomic challenges, that hasn't really started yet.
Mm, and that's such a huge opportunity.
Right?
To address what we're saying here.
And so could you imagine if, and the MOU is around class 4 to class 8. So if you could imagine that we could actually get that in there, the impact would be astronomical, right?
Yeah.
Kids who went through our programs, 100% of them, boys and girls came back after COVID, right? When 10% of, I think, girls and 5% of boys or something like that didn't come back, right? So I think that is the gap, is holding our leaders accountable to putting in place the things that they have committed to putting in place, right? And we have to demand that more products are lifelines, basically, for
products
people.
Products as lifelines.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you. Thank you for supporting the My First Time Stories podcast, where we're pushing for menstrual justice, one conversation and one story at a time. I'm Janet Bogwa. Continue to follow us across our platforms, and we can't wait to be with you again in our next episode.